Tonight we will have Shiur on Masechet Kiddushin. I'm Jeffrey Sachs of Web Yeshiva, and we're coming to you live from Beit Knesset Mishkan Tzipora. And we're on Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis 56b. Last week we had some introduction, and we learned this Mishnah. What is the topic of this Mishnah at the top of Nun Vav Amud Beis? How could you have forgotten already, having spent the week reviewing?
Orla.
It's not Orla. The topic is not Orla. Being Mekadesh.
Well, you're jumping the gun.
Being Mekadesh, using an object, which is Asur Bahana'a, as an Emtsa'e Kiddushin, as the vehicle as a vehicle to initiate Kiddushin.
Oh, it doesn't say Asur Bahana'a. I gave examples of the ones that I mentioned in the Mishnah.
But as we'll see immediately from the Gemara, Chazal certainly understood that the context here is Asur Bahana'a. Otherwise, what's the common denominator of these things?
No, I mean, why not include other things that are Asur Bahana'a?
And then the Mishnah says you should not be Makadesh for something which is Asur Bahana'a. For example, Orla is Asur Bahana'a. Fruit of the tree during the first 3 years. But if you do take a pri, which is Asur Bahana'a, that's worth a Shaveh Pruta, and you're Mekadesh, so you shouldn't have done it, but she is. Mm-hmm. Is she?
And if she fulfilled the other means
of getting married? Eina Mikudeshet. Why is Shana Mekudeshet? What's they do?
She didn't get anything. It doesn't exist.
So that's basically what we said last week. But however, if you sell, how could you sell something that's also Bahana? It's not worth anything.
It's worth the people will pay.
Well, something's worth something to whoever's willing to pay for it. Right?
Right. A goy would be willing to pay.
A goy might be very, very, very happy. The example we gave last week was veal parmesan, a basar bachalav. But people go to restaurants, I'm told. People go to restaurants and eat veal parmesan. It costs a lot of money. Right? So somebody might be willing to pay money for it. Should you sell it to him?
No.
But if you do, and then you use that money, the prohibition does not transfer to the money. And that money is kesef, a financial instrument. And if you're Mekadesh a woman with that, Mekudeshet. Is it a good simon? Is it like a lucky charm for a happy marriage? Probably not. But from a legal point of view, she is Mekudeshet, even though you have violated the prohibition of selling this Isur Hana. Now the Gemara wants to know, what's the source of all of these Isurei Hana'a? Does the Torah anywhere explicitly say that there's an Isur Hana'a?
No.
How do you know that Basar B'Chalav is Asur B'Hana'a?
That was from the third time.
Lo Tevashel Gidi B'Chalav Emo is repeated three times. And from this Chazal learn it's three distinct Isurim. You can't cook it, you can't eat it, and you can't get any Hana'a from it. Now, interestingly, Lo Tevashel Gidi B'Chalev Imo, you do like a poll and ask people, you wake somebody up in the middle of the night and you say, what is the Jewish relationship to meat and milk? What are people going to say?
Can't put them together.
No. I think most people say Jews can't eat meat and milk.
Okay.
Now, of the three Isurim,
that's well known, the Jews can't eat.
What's a Jewish relationship to a hamburger? 100 people surveyed, top 5 answers on the board. You can't eat it.
And they probably assumed that the eating of the cold, they weren't cooked together, but you ate them together would be a
hamburger. What? I said I meant a cheeseburger. I meant a cheeseburger.
So I think most people also assume that cooking wasn't part of it at all. They would assume that a cold piece of cooked meat and milk that were cooked separately, eaten together, was the same level of the right to prohibition, which it is not.
Right. In other words, most people, unlearned people, non-Jewish people, think any meat and milk. Now, they're right. you know, within the reality of the world that we live in, where you have, you know, under the general principle, that which was not forbidden by the Torah was forbidden by the rabbis. What? I mean, a cold, you take a piece of salami and a piece of cheese and put it together on a piece of bread. What have you violated?
Nothing until you
Minat Torah. No, Minat Torah. You haven't. What do you violate Minat Torah?
Nothing.
It's cold.
Well, now you're going to put some rice on.
They didn't cook it.
Right. If it's not cooked together, there's no Isur Minat Torah.
Mother's milk.
Right? If it's not cooked together, it's not the rice.
Good point. That's another part of the drash said.
That mother's milk.
Just the mother, even though it's explicitly.
Right. Mother's milk is a men.
Are you claiming that it's an Isur Darabanan and not an Isur Daraisa?
To take a cold piece of salami.
Yeah. Meat and milk together.
Yeah.
Yep. To eat meat and milk, which has not been cooked together, is an Isur Derabanan.
Then that means that it's a Suffolk Derabanan Lakula?
It's...
No, my...
But what's the case?
A couple of weeks ago, we spoke about, you mentioned our Schechter's new book, the idea of whether when something is learned out...
Yeah.
What's the word?
Divrei Sofrim.
Learned out. From a pasuk, whether it has a din of the oraita or the rabbanan,
yeah,
it's not a gzera de rabbanan.
It's a gzera de rabbanan.
No, we're talking about that's something you learn out from the pasuk.
Eating meat and milk that's been cooked together is derived from the pasuk, but that's the oraita.
Yes,
but meat and milk which has not been cooked together but is eaten simultaneously, everyone agrees is only also de rabbanan because there's no.
So that's put on the
same level. Let's clarify here.
That would put on the same level as eating chicken with milk?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
What's asur? Lo tivashel gidi bechalev imo. The meat of any kosher animal, the slaughtered meat, the kosher slaughtered meat of any kosher behema, meaning cow, goat, sheep, lamb,
llama.
Giraffe, llamas are not kosher.
No? All right.
I have no idea.
Llamas are not kosher.
Llama.
Of course, they don't have the simanim. They don't have... right? So any kosher slaughtered meat of a kosher animal with kosher milk, the milk of a kosher animal... That has been milked, as opposed to
extracted from the udder after.
Yeah, if you shecht a cow, a nursing cow, and it has an udder full of milk, the milk that's in the udder is fleishich, and min haTorah midrabanan we say it's marit ayin. But Minat Torah, you cook that calf in the milk of its mother after the mother's been shechted, and then you take the milk out. It's not aser. But if you milk, you have kosher milk and kosher meat, right? And you cook them together. What's cooking? So in Masechet Chulin and in Masechet Shabbat, we spend a lot of time defining what the parameters of cooking are, right? I mean, we have to define what cooking is because it's in Emalacha and Shabbat. Right? So not all heating up of food is cooking. After all, we're not Karaites. We heat up our food on Shabbat. That doesn't constitute cooking. So you have to have a very precise definition of what constitutes cooking. But when you cook, I mean, you get the milk boiling and you put the steak inside of it. That's cooking.
I think that was why they said one of the only places where you could do a real doraisa, bazal chalav, is in a Treif McDonald's in Israel. Because the meat is probably kosher. And the milk is kosher, and they cook together.
Maybe, yeah. Is the meat in a non-kosher McDonald's kosher?
Yes, it is, really is.
Oh, yeah?
They actually, when asked, is it kosher? You're right. Uh-huh. I've heard that they say, well, the meat is kosher, and the cheese is kosher.
Right. Hazal, however, extend this issur to other animals. Most notably, fowl. Chickens, geese, turkeys, ducks.
Sometime in the Galil, though, it didn't.
No, so that's a machlokis. That's a machlokis tanoim. Rabbi Yossi Aglili did not extend that. and they continue to have chicken parmesan. Right? That's not the normative halakha, but that's that there was a shita, rejected shita. Why isn't chicken part of the Torah's prohibition of?
Because chicken is not meat.
Why is chicken not meat?
That's a good question. I'm sure it's discussed.
What defines meat for the purposes
it
of?
Doesn't do it curd.
Well, and it's much more basic thing.
It doesn't give milk. In other words, obviously, what's the machshava behind lo tivashel gidi bechalevimo?
You have it that we could.
Yeah. In other words, meat for the purposes of the isur basar bechalav is meat that comes from an animal whose species also gives milk to the exclusion of fowl. Right? Ah, so why did Chazal not say also fish?
Okay.
That's something that has nothing to do with basar b'chalav. There's a practice amongst certain Sfaradim not to have meat and fish in the same way. Milk and fish in the same way that there's a more widespread minhag not to have meat and fish together, because of sakana, right? You know, there's all these ideas of like there are certain things that you know you don't do.
Sakana.
Well, considered like the cross mixing of these things. Whether I don't know, they didn't have like a concept of bacteria, but wait. But everybody agrees that that's a minhag, not. And the Sfaradim that don't eat right? now it's popular. In the restaurants, in the Mahadrin restaurants, whenever they have a fish dish that has milk with it, they write Lenohagim Heter to those that are accustomed to be lenient about having these things together. But you know, for all of us, it's not. You don't need a Heter. So Chazal said, fowl and milk, we treat it the same as if it's Asur Min HaTorah. And Chazal said, behemot, meat, real meat, cow and milk, that's not cooked together but is eaten simultaneously, like a salami sandwich with a slice of cheese, is asur derabanan, but it's not asur deraita. It's not asur deraita. And then on top of that, we had all these other things about separate dishes and waiting between meat and milk and however many hours you wait between meat and milk and how nervous you get about waiting between meat and milk. You know, in our house, there's this discussion of like everybody's got like fleishikophobia.
Fleishophobia.
Right? Shabbos lunch. Like, I don't know, like as if like somebody's coming around knocking on the door giving out pints of Ben and Jerry's. Like, you know, you want to be ready. But, you know, my daughter will like rush through Shabbat lunch. And like as she's gulping down the last bite of chicken, she's like, what time is it? What time is it? I need to know.
Is it 4 o'clock? 12. She goes, I forgot.
What 12. 12:06. So she'll say, so I can have halav at 6:06. That she can't do a math problem for the life of her.
But to
calculate 6 hours ahead, as she's able to do, it's like what?
Like a pie's on the
like a what?
The Bucky.
An episode of The Office where
there
was an accountant who was not good at counting it all. Calculating it all, but he liked to eat, so when he had calculated the number of pies, he was able to do it very quickly.
They would give him a math problem, he couldn't do it. They would say, how much is 340 pies divided by six people? And he could, like, calculate.
That's a universal one. You ask a kid that's just learning arithmetic, it's 3 plus 4. They're annoying. So, if you have 3 candies, and somebody gives you 4 more candies, how many we have?
Right.
They know.
Okay, let's look at the Gemara now. Enough wasting time. So the Gemara wants to know, how do you know it's also Ba'anal? Be'orla, Minalan. How do you know that Orla is Asur Ba'ana? Titania. And now we have all these different types of psukim. Where's the pasuk of Orla? This week's Parsha. You know that Parsha's Kadoshim? This week's Parsha.
Perek Yutet, Pasuk Kaf Gimel. It's at the beginning of Shlishi. You come to Eretz Israel and you plant any kind of fruit tree. V'araltem orlato. What does it mean? V'araltem orlato.
You shall block.
You should make the orla.
That's by the way. That's what the article translated as. You should treat the fruit as orla.
You should treat the fruit as orla. Well, I mean, that's basically what it means. Va'araltem orlato et piryo shalosh shanim yelachem arelim lo ye'ochel. So the Gemara says, arelim lo ye'ochel, do not eat the orla. So ein li ela isra achila. Where in this pasuk do you see an isra hana? What is that pasuk? The pasuk I just read. What does it teach you?
You can't eat it.
Don't eat orla. Right? There's lots of things that you can't eat, but they're not also bahano. And you were tossing shrimps on the barbie?
Yeah.
Where do you get the shrimps? You can't buy shrimp. Oh, you brought them from Australia. It's dangerous for you to say that. You used to be a restaurateur. People are going to wonder what they ate in that restaurant.
Shrimps on the barbie.
Right? Can you buy shrimps? Can you sell shrimps?
Sure.
No, in other words, but halachically, can you be a shrimp stealer?
Yeah, of course.
Right? As a matter of fact, I mean, I don't know if fishing, my dad, moved to Florida and got into fishing. It became like a whole thing. It's like perfect for an old Jewish man because you have to buy a lot of tchotchkes. And it gets you out of the house for a long time. It explains why my parents have had such a long and happy marriage.
He goes out fishing.
Jeez.
I'm just wondering, look at the crowd here, if it's proper to use that terminology. Old Jewish men.
Yeah. You.
Good point.
You've got more hair than me. Do any of you fish? Industrial fishing, these big fishing fleets that go out. So what do they catch? I mean, it could be that they go out fishing for tuna. Tuna's big business in fishing. But do they only catch tuna? They catch everything in the sea. And what do they do with it?
Probably throw back.
Well, the garbage they throw back. But then on the boat, they separate. Here's the tuna. The tuna is very profitable. But they also capture lots of other fish and when they bring it back to market, So can you own a Jewish fish, a Jewish fishing boat? You throw out the nets, you catch whatever comes up, right? So you catch lobsters. You catch lobsters. What? You sell them. Who do you sell them to? You don't sell them to the Belzer Rebbe. You sell them to the Goyim that eat the lobsters.
The same as you do when you have a schlachthaus.
The same as you do when you have a schlachthaus and you have a novella, right? It happens.
No,
are pigs asur bahana? No, it's like a special kind of taboo against Jews.
Why do Jews can't play football?
Because Jews can't, they can't touch the pig. Yeah, that's why. That's why Jews weren't good football players. That's the reason. Why? But they do call it the pig skin, don't they?
No, they do.
But it's not made out of. Is it still made out of leather or it's plastic?
I know it's plastic. Well, maybe. Plastics are sophisticated now.
So you're allowed to, this pasuk, where do you get the idea of asurbana from Orla? But Orla minalan, the Tanya araltem, arelim lo yeochel, ein li ela israchila. Hana'a minayin. Where do we derive the prohibition of hana? Shelo yehene mimenu. Velo yitzvabo, you can't get benefit from the orla, like by selling it, for example,
or by using it as a dye.
Velo yadlikbo, you have orla olives, so you can't eat them. But how do you know you can't turn them into olive oil to burn? Talmud lomar ve'araltem et orlato lerabot et kulam. So that double lashon. How did Art Scroll translate it?
treated as orla.
Ah, so there's art scroll is not so traditional. So what is aratem et orlato? It means Chazal say aratem et orlato means the orla is orla. It's really orla. The double language is there to teach you orla. You can't eat it, and orla, you can't get hanah from it. Beklea kerem, that was another thing that's also. Klea kerem, remember, is if you have grapevines, you can't plant, there's certain things you can't plant underneath the grapes, in proximity to the grapes. Let's say you have wheat, that's good, because you have a lot of, the grapes don't grow on the ground, right? One stalk.
You see the terraces?
Yeah, sure.
They're on the ground. The modern ones are up on this, or is it, but they lay them down.
But they're not, in other words, it could be for whatever reason they do that. I mean, it's possible to, right? In nature, no, but in other words, but in other words, you get a much bigger yield if you build these, what do you call it, trellises.
And it's not modern yet, right. but the old Arab ones, because right. which probably what they used to do is hanging on the ground, right. Yeah.
But so you have all this shetach underneath. When you have the trellises, right, a trellis can be, let's say, as big as this big square table. Right? Like a chuppah. You have four poles and then the crossbeam, and it grows up along the top. So why waste all that space underneath? So that's called klei akerem. It's like a shatnez, things that can't be mixed together. And it's asur bahanasa. How do you know that's asur bah minalan? How do you know? Omar chizkia, Omar kra, ten, where's this posuk? This is in Dvarim Kaf Bet. Pasuk Tet. This is in Parshas Ki Teitzei. Right? Lo tizrak harmacha kilayim pen tikdash hamle'a hazera asher tizra tvoa baker. So Chizkiah, this is not Chizkiah HaMelech. But Chizkiah says it's from this Pasuk, pen tikdash. How does he read the Pasuk pen tikdash? Pen tukad ish, lest the flame will catch it. Meaning, if you do plant klei akerem, you have to burn it, you have to destroy it. But if you plant it, pen, what does pen mean?
Lest,
but not lest, it means lest as a warning, right? Because don't do this, otherwise you will have to destroy it by fire. Right? And from this, we learn out that klei akerem is asur bahana. But Rav Ashi says, Amar penye kadosh. What does it mean, penye kadosh?
Sanctified.
Meaning like? Well, meaning lest it become prohibited for your use in the same way as hektish. Right? In the same way as hektish.
It's interesting that what you have to do is burn it when you can't have hanah. You can't take it and put it in the fireplace and burn it and get heat.
Right.
But you have to burn it.
You have to burn it in a destructive, wasteful manner. Yeah, this happened. In reality, I don't know about like an industrial farming, because they have different ways of doing things. But in reality, like if you have a backyard and you plant some things, you don't really get much orla. No, because in the first couple of years, you plant an olive tree, you know, not from, you know, like this olive tree that's out here. Remember when they planted this olive tree? Because you're a Johnny come lately. You weren't here when we founded the neighborhood. You remember.
You weren't even a fan.
No, but I was here when the tree came. You were an old timer. That's the way it is in Israel. The guy that got there the day before you is an old timer, and the guy that comes the day after is a Johnny come lately. Well, you guys are old timers in Efrat, but not in Zion. But this tree in the Kikar, they didn't plant it as a sapling. That tree's 100 years old, right? So what do? They go someplace and they uproot an old olive tree, and they wrap it up and they bring it with a crane. And they put it in the middle of the town square, ready made. Right, but if we have an olive tree in our backyard, which is now 20 some odd years. How long are we here?
Since 2001.
So 20 this summer it'll be 23 years.
We planted it. It was a stick. It was a stick. We have a picture of our son Shalom, who was then 5 years old, standing next to it, dwarfing. This little five-year-old was dwarfing this little stick that we planted. Now it's a good-sized tree.
It's a good-sized son.
It's a good-sized son. The tree's bigger. It's a good-sized tree, but it's nothing compared to this tree, which is probably, the tree's about 100 years old. So we didn't get olives off of this tree for years. Until the tree matures, it doesn't start producing fruits. And even in the beginning, the fruits that it produces aren't edible. They're not good. So you don't really usually you don't have a problem with Orla. But we did have with one of the trees. Oh, maybe it's Rimonim.
We did. We had the same thing. Right? We planted fruit trees next to our house in Orange Wood.
Yeah. So, right. So at the time, I didn't realize, because I couldn't eat the Rimonim, the pomegranates, that they're not edible anyway. It's a rotten, there's something no good with the fruits that this tree produces. But I think in that last year of Orla, it started producing fruit, and we had good sized Rimonim. And I said, oh, I want to be Makayim the din of burning the Orla. You know how hard it is to burn whole Rimonim? it didn't work. Like, we made like a little fire in the backyard, like a little Midura in a can. And I thought it didn't. I had like, then I had to wrap it all up and throw it away. Yeah, but it was a mess. Anyways, we had to wrap it up and throw it away. So there's a machlokas between Chizkiah and Rav Ashi about what's the source, how to read the pasuk. They both identify the pasuk the same, but they read it in different ways. So the Gemara says, it's Penye Kadosh, if we're going to say it's like Hekdesh. But wait a second, there's a problem with that interpretation. What's the problem? Ima Kodesh Tofes et Damav V'yotzeh L'chulin, Af Klei HaKeren Tofes et Damav V'yotzeh L'chulin. So if you want to analogize Klei HaKeren to Hekdesh, to something which is Kadosh, which is forbidden to get Hanofrum, right? But wait a second. There's a way out of Hekdesh. Pidyon. You transfer the value of the Hekdesh to money. You have to add a 20% bonus, but then the object is no longer Kadosh. The Kedusha transfers to the money, and the money then has to be given to Beit HaMikdash. Can you do that with Orla? No.
I mean, it's not the only. I understand what they're doing with this question, but there are other frameworks of Hekdesh that I could have just said. Like, you can't take something that's in the Hekdesh of the Beit HaMikdash and just say, I'm going to put that. It's like
it's Me'ila.
Yeah, so you could have said the same thing. You could have said, no, it's the same thing. You can't touch something else in Hekdesh. You can't touch your own specific thing.
Yeah. But that would also be an imprecise comparison. Are you allowed to burn Me'ila? Are you allowed to burn it?
That's where it's.
No, but the point is, that's exactly the point. In other words, it's if it was hektish, according to Rav Ashi, when he says it's usser, like hektish is usser, right? And as if I'm makdish bowl of nuts. Can I then burn the nuts? No. What happens if I burn the bowl of nuts that I made Hekdesh? It's Me'ila.
Yeah.
Right?
You have to reimburse the Hekdesh from
Yeah. But the etzem act of destroying it is forbidden. But that's not what Rav Ashi means. Right? In other words, So the Gemara says, "Af klei akerim tofes et damav v'yotzei l'chulin." So according to that, it would mean that you could transfer the kedusha, but that's certainly not the case. Ela mechaverta dechizkia. So from this, we see that Chizki is reading. There's no nafkamina. There's no nafkamina lahalocha. It's a machlokas about how do you. It's not even a machlokas about which pasuk is the source. It's how you darshan the pasuk to get at the meaning. They agree that this pasuk pen to kadesh is the source. They agree that means there's an isser hana, but they disagree on the path that they take from point A to point B. So the Gemara says that Chizkiyah's reading is more sound, is more conceptually sound, and Ravashi's reading doesn't work out because it leaves this kind of back door for a logical critique. So the reason, what is pen tikdash means? Pen tukadesh. Pen tikdash means, right, if you plant clay akarim, so then you will have to destroy it. Why do you have to destroy it? Because it's asur. Behano.
How do you understand Rashi? Because I'm not sure I follow it, but it seems to be bringing up an important question. When you're saying, at least the question that, like you said, you can't...
Af clay akarim?
Right, because he's saying, you know, you said kilayim you can't sell, unlike hekdesh, which you can't be put there. But the Mishnah says that you, if you are machran v'kidesh, b'dvayim v'kudesh, it means there is a way out.
No, you shouldn't do it. Right? You shouldn't do it.
But you can't, but technically it works.
Right, which means what? Like, which means...
It's not like you can't. Oh. It's not like like we talked last week. It's not like Avodah Zarah, you can't possibly benefit from you. The sale works. There is, maybe that's the lesson that you... I mean, and that's, I'm not sure what he's saying about the...
No. Oh, so maybe he's... In other words, maybe he's explaining... You understand what Rashi's saying? David, explain your point.
No, I'm not sure I follow Rashi enough.
Rashi says, it's the Rashi that says, Af klei akarim tofes et damav. That if you, that's the Havamina. Whereas the Havamina is, Ravashi's Havamina is, if Klei HaKerem is like Hektish, it's Asur Bahano. But then the Gemara says there's a flaw. What's the flaw with Ravashi? If you compare Klei HaKerem to Hektish, so then shouldn't you be able to say that you can be Poda the Klei HaKerem? And then the money, the Kedusha transfers to the money? So Rashi explains this Havamina. Alma tznan b'matnitin machran v'kidesh b'demehem mikudeshet. Alma ein osran et demehem. He's explaining the Havamina. What's even the Havamina to think that you could sell it? So the Havamina that you could sell it is based on the Mishnah itself that says that if you sell the Klei HaKerem, right, and you use the money, right, meaning what? That the Kedusha hadn't transferred, because had the money, had Klei HaKerem really been like Hektish, literal Hektish, and then you poda it, or you certainly, if you sell it, so then what would happen to the money?
Well, it would,
no.
The money would be in money.
If the money would be kosh, and then you wouldn't be able to use it even to be...
I call it teref.
That's the point. It's in the Havamina. In other words, Rav Ashi says maybe you read the pasuk pentik dash as maybe it becomes like hektish. In what way does it become like hektish? What's the point of a metaphor or a simile here? This is a simile. A simile. It doesn't mean that it's equivalent. It means in some way it's the same. In what way is a kidney bean like a kidney stone?
No.
It's not at all. Have you ever had a kidney stone?
Baruch Hashem, no.
Baruch Hashem, no.
A kidney bean is like a kidney.
Exactly. In other words, don't be confused by a superficial resemblance. There is a superficial resemblance between kidney bean and kidney stone. They both start with the word kidney. Right? Why do they both start with kidney? One, because it's found inside your kidney, and the other, because it's shaped like a kidney, although it has nothing to do neither with this nor with that. Right? So, what's a simile? Right? A simile means, maybe it's like hektish. It can't mean that it's identical to hektish. It doesn't mean that it's transformed into hektish. It means that it's like hektish in the sense that, which attribute? Isser hano. So the Gemara says, but this is not such a good way to go from point A to point B. Point A meaning the pasuk, point B the Isser Hanah, because it opens us up to redeeming it. Hektish, we'd be able to redeem it, right? And if we redeem hektish, what happens to the money that you redeem it on? It becomes hektish. But we know that's not the case with Klei HaKerem. How do we know that? From our Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says, If you sell it, which you shouldn't do, but if you do sell it, what happens to the money? It's chulin.
It's less severe than hekdesh, not more severe.
It's less severe than hekdesh, but it's also kidney beans and kidney stones. It's two different things altogether. Don't be confused by the use of this of the word kadosh. Right? Don't come to think the word kadosh means like hekdesh. So therefore, that's why the Gemara says that Chizkiyah's path from point A to point B is the more sound one than what's the difference? It's a drasha, right? It's a drasha. Everybody agrees that it's Asur Bahano. And everybody agrees on what the source of the Asur Bahano is. Right? It's just a question of how do you juice the pasuk to get to the result. So you've all heard drashot. I don't mean drashot like drashot chazal. I mean like when people speak in shul. Sometimes it's a little more convincing. Sometimes it's a little less convincing. Sometimes a person makes a point, and by getting to the point, they conveniently align all the flaws in the arguments. Well, if you're dremeling a little on Friday night, you didn't notice that. If you were busy reading the Torah tidbits instead, you certainly didn't notice that. But, not every drush is it. Now it's Shabbos morning. After you had a good night's sleep, the darshanim have to answer to a higher standard. Okay. Yeah. That's a different question. What all of the different forms of...
For instance, if you manufacture a woolen linen garment, you can sell them.
So, of course, they're all... Obviously, these Isurim are related, but they're not identical. Shor HaNiskal. Now, you know what the Shor HaNiskal is, of course, right? Where is Shor HaNiskal found? Parshas Mishpatim. Exodus chapter 21. Exodus chapter 21. If your ox gores a person to death, this is not the ox that gores another ox. This is an ox that gores a person and kills him. Sakol yisakel ashor. The animal has to be put to death. Is it only an ox? No. Rashi tells us an ox is a placeholder for any animal. You have to. It could be a chicken. It's a Mishnah in Ediot. One of the Mishnah in Ediot talks about the Tarnagol Haniskal B'Yerushalayim. How can a chicken gore you? No, peck. What? Nope. It talked about the case in the Gemara. The case in the Mishnah is there was a little baby. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Ediot. You know what Ediot is? Sechet Ediot's a curious... Next time, Rachmanus, there's a Shiva, and you have to sign up for one of those Mishnayos, sign up for Ediot. So it's a fun Masechet. It's short. It's a grab bag. It's the miscellany. On a certain day, on a particular day...
They sat together and...
Oh, the Chachamim came and everybody gave their testimony as to various halachot. And every halakha that was said that day became halakha. These were matters about which there's no machloket. So it's this miscellany of things. It says Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava came and he was me'id al chamisha dvarim. Right? And this one came and he gave testimony on three other things. What day was it that Masechet Ediot was taught? It was the day that the episode happens in the Beis Medrash with Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua, where they try to depose him, as reported in the fourth parak of Brachot. Right? That when they let all the Talmidim come in, when they had a more permissive attitude and people were able to come and learn, that was the day, Bo Bayom, on that very day, all of these great halachot were taught. So one of the halachot that was taught was about the Tarnagol Aniskal, right? That there was a rooster that came and pecked. There was a little baby. You know, they always tell you, you have to be careful, little babies' heads, the heads are soft. A little rooster came and pecked on a baby and killed the baby, and the betin Hagadol put it to the chicken to death, the rooster to death. So any animal is susceptible to this halacha. So shor and iskal, minayin, how do you know that it's asur b'hano? Right? So I own an ox, and the ox, Rachman, has killed somebody. So betin kills the ox. So now what do I have? What do we call that in halacha? An avela. An avela. Right, it's an animal that's been killed, but not through shechita. They stone it to death. So I can't eat it, obviously. But cows are, you know, a cow carcass is worth something. What's it worth?
Skin.
Yeah, aren't you all wearing shoes, belts, watch bands? What? Sefer Torah. Right. You could write in theory. You could write a Sefer Torah on the.
Yeah.
It can't be from a basa behemat tmeya. It has to be from a kosher species. But. So how do you know that the shor niskal is asur bana? You know, you own an ox. It's worth a lot of money. You make a big investment in an ox because you got to feed it all those years. Shor niskal minayin d'tanya mimashma shene emar sakol yisokel hashor. How does Art Scroll translate that? Well, what do they do with va'araltem et orlato? It should really be orla.
Surely.
So surely, sakol yisakel?
Surely,
thou shalt surely stone it to death. Which is probably the literal meaning. So, eini yadea she nevelahu. You know, eini? No, I'm sorry. Sakol yisakel ashur. Eini yadea she nevelahi. Unevela asura ba'achila. Ma talmud lomar lo yeochel. Why does the Torah tell you don't eat it?
It means you can't get benefit from it otherwise.
Oh, you prepared ahead. Take the win. No, that means. Okay. So a good idea. It's not what the Gemara says. In other words, if I tell you, if I'm writing a pasuk, if I'm a kodesh bar, I write a pasuk. I say, here's a nevela, don't eat it. Isn't that tautological? By telling you it's a nevela, that's enough to know you can't eat it. What?
This is being killed properly and cold.
Yafe, that's the Gemara's question. Sakol yisakel is the same as saying what? It's an avela, meaning it's not kosher. It's not because it didn't have shechita. So here's meat that didn't have shechita. Don't eat it. It's repetitive. And we're so worried that God didn't have enough ink. There should be nothing repetitive. Created the whole world, but was cheap on the ink. Magid lacha she'im shechato la'achar shenigmar dino asur ba'achila. So the first answer is no. So what's the repetition? What does kol yisakel mean?
Absolutely, positively.
When? When?
In the future.
In the future. Meaning sakol yisakel is the gzar din in the betin. Trial. It's kind of crazy. Although didn't I mention, last week, that this idea of trying animals was something that even in, like, I think this may appear somewhere in Dickens, right? This idea of Google, David, you're in charge of Googling, right? That they put us on trial, like in 19th and 18th century England, right? But they would bring them into court, meaning who was really on trial? The owner, for damages done by the animal. But the animal would be present in the court. What? Habeas porpoise. Right? So the animal would be brought in and they pass the exodus. They say, sakol yisakel. You have to kill this animal. But before it's taken out to the stoning pit, what does the clever owner of the animal do? Shechts it. So now is it in the vela? No. Nevertheless, you know what? you still can't eat it. That's what the repetition of Sakol Yisakel, Lo Ye'ochel, is doing. You have to stone it. And even if you chop a rind and you shecht it, you still can't eat it.
We could be a page better.
Well, forward it to us. Bahana minayin. So if that's the case, how do you know it's asur ba? Talmud lomar ubal hashur naki. Ubal hashur naki. What does it mean, bal hashur naki? Yeah. The owner of the ox, after losing the penalty of losing the ox, he is
clear.
Well, it seems like it means he's clear, but what is it, how does the Gemara read it? Ubala shor naki mai mashma Shimon ben Zoma omer ke adam sheomer lechaveiro. Hold on a second. Ke adam sheomer lechaveiro. Yatsa ploni naki minichasav. The ein lo bohem hana'a shel klum.
He was
wiped out. He was cleaned out. Right? Not clean in the sense off the hook, but clean in the sense of he's got no profit from this. But sakol yisakel means, okay, he's got, there's a dead cow here, which is still worth, should be worth something on the market, but he's, but it, it, they get rid of it, they throw it, whatever they do with it.
They don't give it to the family of the victim.
They don't, and the family of the victim doesn't get it.
They would be able to.
Yeah, but why? Because it's not really damages. In other words, in this case, the animal is judged, is deemed to be a dangerous animal. And society has an interest in protecting people from danger. From danger. But the owner wasn't negligent per se. Right? The owner wasn't negligent per se. This wasn't a case of like a shor mu'ad where the bet din had warned you he's caused damage, not manslaughter. Or I mean, manslaughter is the wrong word. There's been no death. The shor go, the animal goes and like ruins somebody's field, ruins somebody's property. Right here, since there's the issue of causing death, right? So you can't say that the owner. It's not like the owner. Like there are people in the neighborhood who.
It's happened in zoos occasionally.
In zoos,
if an ant, like you know, if an animal gets loose and kills somebody, they'll kill it, even though it's not.
Right.
You know,
they always put the animal down.
Even if it's
right. Not, you can't blame the tiger for the tiger gets out of the cage.
And because some teenagers were playing in the
right,
cage.
You can't blame the tiger for mauling somebody. That's what tigers do. But nevertheless, that is the practice, I think. Why? What's the rationale behind it? That once they get the taste for man flesh, they.
Can't have it walking around. I wonder if that's still the true case in that kind of Western society. I wonder.
Oh, definitely, yeah. No, even in San Francisco, when I used to live near the zoo, and there was a big thing a few years ago where there's. Teenagers were taunting some animal when I came in. And they...
There was just, I saw on the, what do they call that? The internet? I don't know. Somebody showed me the Zach, the internet. There was a guy in some zoo in Germany. And the guy was like really stone cold drunk. And he jumped into the.
Oh, yeah.
No, he jumped into, you know, like, it's like in the Jerusalem Zoo where like they have the fence and they have like this big moat with water. And he jumped into the water, and it was like a grizzly bear or something, you know. And so the grizzly bear jumps into the water, and he got pretty scraped up, but he didn't get killed. So how can you blame the bear for that? Why would that be a sign? Letting that bear live, why is that a sign of Western decadent society?
Die, didn't kill. You wouldn't have to kill the animal.
I've said it, but even if he had gotten killed, this idiot gets drunk and goes jumping, goes.
You don't want to have an animal saying this is the animal killed the human being. It's something we have.
Is the animal that with whom? No, that's a different case. That's a case of bestiality.
Right.
If a person is involved with bestiality, it's the animal's killed because it's a gnai for humanity, right? But in this case, this idiot drunk guy in Berlin jumps into the moat to go swimming with the bears. And a bear eats him, which is what bears do. It's how Hashem made bears. right?
Yeah.
So why is it a sign of decadence?
It's a violation of the order that Hashem established that animals have a fear of people, and when they don't.
No, they don't. That, where do you see that Hashem made, right? That's, Hashem made the order that man should prove umlu etaretz v'chivshua, rudu b'dgat hayam, that we should, but this fellow had reversed the order of creation by acting like a moron, by foregoing his sentience to get drunk and to jump into the pool with the bear. The bear is created to be a predator.
You're saying something you believe, or just find a lawyer with me?
No, I believe this. Why is the bear? When we watch
people on a higher level than animals, and that's violated. Maybe you want to fix that. It's not right that an animal should. It's a violation of some higher level of nature. I feel strongly that I cannot express it very well. Yeah. That animals, when they violate the order and they eat upwards, eat something on a higher level than them, it's naturally repulsive. It's like we don't like Venus flytraps. Plant life is eating animal life. It's repulsive.
Is it? People buy Venus flytraps to have them in their houses.
Go right ahead.
Do they know that there is a...
I don't know.
Something like that.
I'm sorry, one second. You're thinking practically.
Yeah,
this has got nothing to do with morality and ethics. It has to do with you want people to come back to the zoo. And maybe. Might be much more. But there might be a much more prosaic reason for this.
It's a favorite collection that there was a zoo where a kid wandered in the...
This is it, yeah.
An animal enclosure or something like that.
No. They,
and the croc bit him and killed him. And the zoo refused to kill the croc.
I
wish I could be more certain.
I don't know.
This is a gorilla with a 3-year-old in Cincinnati.
So. Oh, that's Harambe. Famous. That's the most famous gorilla. That became a sensation.
Just being.
But the gorilla hurt him or protected him?
No, he's schlepping him around in his way. But I think they had to put the gorilla down.
For some reason it became a meme. Yeah. People were like saying justice for.
Yeah.
Harambe, the name of the gorilla.
Yeah.
So the Gemara says, anyway, let's just finish up. Mimai dahai lo ye ochel et bisaro. So why does it say don't eat et bisaro? Lehecha deshochit lachar shenigmar dino. That's to teach you this halacha that obviously you can't eat its nevela. Ah, but not every animal on which sakol yisakel was passed is nevela, because you can shecht it between the sentence and the execution, and then it's basar shchuta. But nevertheless, so it has to teach lo yeochel, right? Shnigmar dino hada'ata. So that's what the pasuk is coming to. So Dilma heched shochit la'achar shnigmar dino shari. I might have thought that if you shecht it, even though you shouldn't have, if you shecht it after Betin says it has to be stoned, that you could eat it. Vaha lo ye'ochel hechi diskal ye miskalhu. And lo ye'ochel is there to teach you when it's already been stoned. Hada'ate. Okay, the Rabbi Abahu. Omer bi Elazar, da Omer bi Abahu, Omer bi Elazar, kol makom shenemar lo ye'ochel. Lo te'ochel. Lo tochlu. Echad isur achila, echad isur hana'a. Whenever the pasuk says lo ye'achel, that's a code word. It means you can't eat it, and you can't get hana from it. Ad shi'faret lecha hakatuv kederech she'parat lecha b'nevela. Lekelev tashlichoto, or where do we say the laws of kosher meat are? What parasha?
Right.
In parashat Re'e, Dvarim Perek Yud Dalid Posuk Kaf Aleph. Lo tochlu kol nevela,
But what can you do with it? Lager asher bisharecha titnena v'achala o machor lenachri ki am kodesh atel Hashem. No, in other words, if it were just to say lo tochel nevela, that would mean what? Don't eat it, don't get benefit from it. Unless the Torah specifies that you can get benefit. L'kelev tashlich oto, l'goy, machor l'nachri, that tells you what? That limits lo tochel only to eating and means that you can then get benefit. But in the absence of a halacha telling you, in the absence of a pasuk telling you that you can get hanah from it, so lo tochel means don't eat and don't get hanah. Okay, we'll pick up here in 3 weeks when we next week's Yom Ha'atzmaut, the week after I'm in New York.
So you won't show up this year from the
I had thought about maybe doing it over Zoom, but at that time I'm not gonna be it's the middle of the afternoon, I'm not gonna be available yet.